The NBA playoffs are here, and with FanDuel, your group chat's about to be going off. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets if you win. And with live bets, your heart emojis will really be racing from tip-off to the final buzzer. Plus, when you win, you'll get paid faster than your friends can send you a victory gift. Or is it GIF? Who cares? You won! So get the word out to your crew and download FanDuel today. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets if you win. Make every moment more with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Official partner of the NBA.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Easy.
Hi everyone, welcome back to TBI.
Hi. Say nothing.
Say nothing. Episode 212. 212. I don't know why I said 2012.
Yeah, 2012.
So much on this, I'm trying to get ready to go to Australia tomorrow, or New Zealand actually. And you know that thing of like when you're going away for a long time, like just the amount of packing and shit is just so tedious. But forget all that.
Why don't you just take an empty suitcase because it'll get lost anyway. And then when you get there, buy stuff. T-shirts and jeans because that's what you're going to wear, right?
I've never had a suitcase lost. I've had three friends it's happened to in the last like month. Like I think it's getting more common. I've had suitcases not arrive and then they've couriered it to me the next day, which I actually preferred. It meant I didn't have to carry it from the airport.
That's lost, but just for a little bit of time, isn't it?
Yeah, mine went missing for a month.
Fuck.
Edinburgh, was it?
Yeah, I landed. I only flew from Heathrow, so it's like 1 hour flight. And I landed and my case didn't turn up and I literally had the clothes I was stood up in. So I had to go to the town and like find trainers.
Someone else's suitcase.
Yeah. And I had nothing, not even like a charger for my phone or my laptop, or I lost my jewellery, my clothes. All my cosmetics, everything.
I literally have
nothing. It was so weird.
A month though. At least you got it back though. That is, because it happened to.
You went to LA.
To John Hastings. They always go. Well, to
I had
LA.
A nice, had a nice time then.
But John Hastings, comedian, he went to Edinburgh this year, and his suitcase got lost on the flight over from LA to Edinburgh. He did the whole fringe and constantly trying to get his suitcase back, and it arrived like 2 days before he finished the festival. It's the worst.
At least it was all clean clothes
for that last weekend.
Well, 2 days before I was going home, I just bought myself a new suitcase. Awesome. And I'd bought a new suitcase to go up there in the first place, and now I've got two of everything.
Anyway, let's do the introductions. And we're joined this episode by Fiona Allen, comedian, actor, comedy actor. People often say comedy actors as if like it's a different breed. Do you know what I mean? It's a weird thing where people assume that comedy acting is slightly different to just acting, but you've done serious.
Also serious acting.
You've done all types of acting. You've got a broad spectrum. You've done, you know, legendary.
If the comedy
stuff
doesn't work, then it's serious acting.
If it's not funny, then it's serious.
Well, I started doing serious acting. That was all
you
my
were, you studied acting. You were a proper
Yeah,
student.
I did, and I worked out pretty quickly though what kind of. Like, I got straight into telly in Manchester, and I was playing like a copper. I always get those, like, copper, psychologist.
It's because you're authoritative.
In soaps, I'm always like the psycho that sort of kidnaps somebody at knife point.
I mean,
and that's
in EastEnders, you are a psycho.
Yeah, I did in EastEnders, and in Curry, I was blackmailing somebody in Waterloo.
To get the part, yeah.
I just got, so I get all of those. But weirdly, I did this gig last night. I was in Henley and this lady came up to me and she said, I turned up because I'm a massive fan of Poirot and you were in Lord Edgware Dies. And that's why I turned up. And I was like, this is really interesting because it's like doing stand-up, but I get somebody who's turned up because they're a fan of Poirot. Yeah. I was like, And like that was kind of serious because I got poisoned and I died and made my mum cry when she watched it. Anyway, she turned up for that. So I was like, that's quite
it's
funny.
A bit of a crossover, isn't it? I've never been watching something like Poirot and thought, I'd love to see them do stand up.
I wonder if they're touring.
What weird, you know what I mean? It's but yes, so you've done loads of stuff and obviously sort of very cult comedy stuff as well, like Smack the Pony. But now you're back doing stand-up. So you did, because we were talking the other night, we did a gig to everyone Wednesday, and you did stand-up originally, but you sort of never really did it a lot. You didn't sort of stick with it long enough to get on
the circuit. No, what happened was I moved to...
Anything like that?
No, I moved to London and I realised, like, I didn't know anybody. I had a sister that lived in South London somewhere, and I didn't really know anyone, and I didn't know what to do. And so, like, I thought, I did some open spots, like, I just messed about doing stuff. And then I got an acting job, I think within 12 weeks, and then just carried on acting. Yeah. Because I was acting before anyway, when I was in the North. So I never even thought about doing it. I just carried on doing that. And then voiceovers, I do that as well. So, and then I had kids and I just carried on doing it. It was just a few years ago I started to think about it. I thought it might be quite good fun to do.
So what was the gap between your last open spot gig and your first gig back?
I'd say about 28 years.
Just a little sabbatical.
And so it was really weird. And I never
did you
thought
feel a I'd bit rusty after that little break? Yeah.
Do you know, that's the thing. I wasn't sure, like, I thought, well, the only way of finding
forget
out is to go
bits.
And go with Mike's
third gig. I'm just going to do my old stuff.
So that was it.
Do your old stuff. It's all about Thatcher and shit like that.
So I just went on the mic circuit for a year before lockdown. I just did 5 minutes in clubs all around town, and that was it. It was my little dog's just coming to say hello. I thought, it's quite nice, this. It's quite good fun. And then I realised there was something missing. I know I enjoyed it, but there was something missing, and I couldn't figure out what it was and why I wasn't liking it properly. And it was because I was just being very actressy. I was like sticking to my script.
Yeah.
And I know we all kind of have a thing where we do-ish know what we're going to say. But like I wouldn't have even thought of like coming out of it and messing about and adding stuff and all that. And the minute I started to do that, I really kind of liked it a lot more. And yeah. I realised it's because it's so different. Like, and then people were saying, oh, you should write a show. And I was like, oh, I don't know about that. And I was never thought about doing that or going to Edinburgh, and I ended up doing it. But it was interesting how many comics come up and say, like, oh, it must be not the younger comics do this because the older comics get it. But the younger comics come up and go, oh, yeah, but it must be kind of quite easy for you because you've done all those years of comedy. And I'm like, well, it's not the same thing at all. Acting and stand-up is so different. And he just wasn't getting it, this kid, right? And in the end, I said, well, it sounds a bit really patronising. Well, it was. But I said, like, you know, if you're playing cricket and you hit a ball with a bat, he goes, yeah. And I said, well, you know, if you played golf and you did the same thing, but it's a completely different game, a different technique, you've got to use a different part of your brain. He went, oh, I get it. I was like, yeah.
And it's also like, it's different being part of a group doing a thing as well. With acting, you might be the only person in the scene, but there's still all the camera crew, there's everything. There's a lot going into that. You know, me and I've...
But yeah, I mean, so you're never doing it.
You never feel like you're doing it totally solo. Whereas if you're doing Edinburgh, you know, you're sat backstage on your own before the show. You walk out.
Everything's on your own.
Apart from that one
it's quite
hour.
Lonely,
it can be a lonely existence.
Well, the weird thing, if you, you know, on an acting job, you're not allowed to drive yourself because, well, one, they don't trust you, but insurance purposes, you know, they want you to get there. And so you're always, from the minute you walk out your front door, you're in a car with the driver, you're with somebody. As soon as you get there, you've got the runners, you go to your Winnebagoes, you've got everything, your makeup, you're
people
surrounded
checking
by
on
people.
You.
Yeah.
And it's a very, but as we know, it's like you get in a car, you're on your own. And it when you get there, it's like a really good fun night out, isn't it? Because you've got lots of other comics and it's good fun, but it's very much on your own. And it's different because I remember filming a Smack the Pony sketch and it was with a bull. I had an idea about a matador that fell in love with a bull and she couldn't kill it because she was against it. She changed her mind. And I was in a full suit of lights and the idea was I legged it to Wigan with the bull because I loved it so much. And I remember
some
filming with this
hub,
bull.
That, isn't it?
Pardon? What did you say?
Is that... I've
snuffed. It's a dirty... You said, is it on Pornhub? It was Julian, one of Julian's filthy mind running amok.
Yeah. So anyway, I remember filming with it.
Anyway. Right. Yeah, that was the joke, was it, Julian?
Yeah. Go sort your hair out, shut up. The thing is, I was filming with this bull, and I was on my own with this bull, and it was huge. Like, his head was like massive, and I looked up and I counted actually, and there was about 35 crew.
Yeah.
All round with its cameras and your sparks and your whatever, obviously like out of the way, because they thought if the bull kicked off, we'll sacrifice Fiona. But there's always loads and loads of people, there is. And so it is a very.
You must have had like a bull expert there, did you?
I presume there was a bull handler on set.
Yeah.
Well, you say that. There was just one doddery farmer.
He just delivered a bull.
There he is.
He did just deliver the bull, and no one told me anything because I was supposed to love this bull. I was walking down the street. And the horns on the bull were so huge.
And you were just right. You were right next to the bull. You were filming the scene physically with the bull.
With the bull, I filmed with it all day, and I held on to it. I held on to one of the massive horns, and in my mind, it was like, "Oh, I love it that much." It's like we're holding hands, walking down the street, and it was about four takes in. And by the way, there were glass from the floor to the ceiling, like shop fronts between me and the bull. So all he had to do was like nudge me, and I'd have just gone. Yeah. And it was about four takes in, and the farmer kind of mooched his way up, and he goes, I just want to say what you're doing, holding on to the bull. Don't do that. He doesn't like it.
Four takes in.
And I'm like, but you could have said like ages ago. And it nudged me just on the corner of it. And honestly, onto my ribs. It wasn't being aggressive. It was just, it just moved its head like that. I thought my ribs were broken. I was like, oh, my God, the pain. So I was thinking if it was going to kick off, then...
Yeah.
But anyway, it was grateful.
Everyone apart, wouldn't it? Stop frying everyone in the air.
I mean, it's horrible. I don't think I've ever consciously watched it, but I've stumbled across it on, like, somebody just shares something on Twitter. Have you ever seen, like, a video of, like, matadors just getting absolutely wiped out by the bull?
They like, just toss people in the air, man.
Yeah, but you know something? They need to stop.
Well, I mean, yeah,
it,
I'm
this is horrendous. And there's a lot of the Spaniards are there leafleting outside, and there's loads on social media about anti-blood sport. They're trying, but you've got those diehard people that are still into it, like they chase bulls down the street when they've got like fireworks and they're frightened, and the mentality is so horrific. Yeah, I'm half Spanish, so I get really passionate about
that.
The
bull running thing, it's horrible, but when you see somebody get wiped out, part of you thinks like, well, that was on you. You know, you did basically antagonize a bull and then make it run down a street. Like, there's no sympathy really for people that.
I know, but they've got to ban it, and it's totally. Like all that. It's all those weird like trophy hunters and all the. I know it's a different thing, but it's the same thing. It's like abusive animals, I'm properly into that sort of. You know, I'm always sending off my name on. You know, adding it, going to some mayor somewhere to try and stop it in Texas or something. I'm one of them people. I always send emails, free the dolphins and free the, get rid of those awful parks where people go and pay and these beautiful whales and are just trapped in these tiny tanks. I've just brought, I brought everything down on the podcast to be really serious and ruined it now. I just thought I'd do that for you both.
Right. Well, we do that normally ourselves, so it's good that somebody else has brought that.
Good.
Let's do some questions from the group. We've got loads. Did you work at a hacienda? Is that a...
Yeah,
right,
I did.
That's me. Because a listener, James, says, did you ever bump into... it's on two different topics, this question. He said, did you ever bump into Carolina Hearn, who was going out with Peter Hook when you worked at a hacienda? If not, any other stories about the hacienda are welcome. So I didn't realise Carolina Hearn went out with Peter Hook. That's new information.
Yeah, Hookie was going out with her for a while. He'd split up with his other half. And I mean, she was just a laugh, wasn't she? So,
legend.
And Hookie's quite good fun. She
was
told
great, wasn't she?
Jokes.
So what's
the hacienda again?
Hacienda was famous club.
It was like, it was probably the most famous club in the world. I mean, people came from all over the world to go there. They'd queue up for like 2 hours to try and get in.
Yeah.
It was massive. And those DJs, you know, like Pickering and Graham Park, De Silva, all them, they are still just going around the world working. Yeah, like brilliant. And, you know, they'd land in their helicopters to get out and go and do a festival or whatever. They're, you know, really good. And it was all the house music and And it was a really good time, I have to say. It was a lot of fun. And, you know, the Mondays, Happy Mondays.
Were they as mental as
around Stone Roses were around.
Happy Mondays as mental as the stories suggest.
Yeah.
I met Sean Ryder once at some party, and I was at the table, and he was at the same table, and he was just, like, face down on the table, just asleep. I loved Happy Mondays, man. Yeah. I was proper starstruck.
Well, I went to, like, I think probably the first, apparently the first underground acid house party, the Stone Roses. It was in a car park, like, never been done before. Yeah. I remember turning up.
Oh, wow.
Because we used to find out first, like, where.
Did you know who they were at the time?
Well, we all used to, I mean, like, the Mondays and all of them, they were all Factory Records who owned the Hacienda, so we all knew each other.
Yeah,
we'll hang out and go to places together, or you'd know, you know, people had come into the club, so you got to know everybody. Like, you know, Bez, and Bez is lovely.
He's always seemed nice.
That must have been amazing.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Bez is a really good footballer. He had trials for Man City. Wrong team, I'm afraid, but he was a really good footballer.
Doesn't he own, like, a black cab? Isn't that his car? He's got, like, a London black cab. Is his, like, he's bought one.
One of my mates did that. One of my friends had one of those a few years ago, and it was really funny because he used to just drive in all the taxi lanes and get everywhere
that's
quicker.
Good idea, actually.
That's what he did it for.
Didn't Bez do the intro to one of McCaffrey's Edinburgh shows once?
Maybe.
Is that right?
That sounds about right.
What was it? Sean? I don't know.
Were you there right? Were you there right through the Hacienda days, right up until the end, or were you out of there before it? When did it shut? I can't remember what year it shut.
Well, it got very, the crime thing was bad, you know. It got quite bad. It shut down. I went over to Factory because I had an idea to get them to open a shop, and I was trying to get them to do a clothing label, which they nearly did. They had designers on it. But it was like Wilson was very much, it was all about, it was men, basically. It was very Comme des Garçons, Paul Smith type vibe, but really nice stuff. But I think financially they couldn't do it in the end because the guys that ran it were really brilliant, but they were terrible businessmen. They were creative people.
And that's
kind of why, you know, was what it was. But
it's all comedians.
I mean, they turned down Oasis, you know that.
They turned them down?
They turned down Oasis and the Smiths.
Bloody hell.
Ooh.
It is a ball, isn't it?
Was it... I mean, would they stand by that decision? Was it like they just didn't like what they did? Or was it genuinely bad business?
Well, Oasis were very different then.
Well, that's what I mean, I even remember the first time I
they had to find their feet and find their own voice, I think. But whatever their reasons were, it was their reasons. But I saw so many live bands, so many brilliant parties. It was a really... really brilliant.
So did you
scene.
See Oasis, actually, like, very early Oasis? Did you ever see it?
I've seen all those bands.
Yeah.
And then you get somebody weird like Madonna turning up and doing something, you know?
What's your thoughts on...
And then the next day, you know, you're watching Morrissey, or then it's, you know... So I've never really got into another... I mean, I love different sorts of music and it's all moved on and whatever. It's all different genres. You like what you like. But that being part of that and being around it was really exciting, and it was so much fun. And, you know, I'm not in my 20s, you know, I'm not into kind of that. I don't like clubs, you know, I don't like going to clubs. And I think once you've worked in one, you don't get into them again.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things. And but I think to have been there at probably the best club in the world at the time, it was pretty... amazing.
Yeah.
It was really interesting.
Let's do another question. Do you like? Do you still like any? Just as an offshoot of that, what's your thoughts on like the sort of what Oasis are up to now, like the Noel Gallagher, Noel Liam's solo stuff and all that? Because I was a massive Oasis, like, seminal to me, and I was writing that teenage obsession with them. I thought they were so cool, but I've got mates of mine, same age, who love everything they've done since, and I'm the opposite. I'm like, no, I just like that period where they were seminal to me, and I'm not
those
really...
Those first two albums.
I'm not really... I've sort of grown up now, and I'm into, you know, so I never really loved anything they did after it. It's like, I just want them to stay together and just be them.
I think I sort of agree with you, but then again, I think people move on and they change and they grow in a different way. It's like if we all think back when we were like 27 or 28, you know, essentially we're probably all very similar people, but what you do and what you want to be into is different. And I think that they probably artistically might you know, have different views on which way they want to go. I think one, like Liam's probably more Oasis, isn't he? And like,
but Noel's, yeah, and you can feel the difference when it's him doing Oasis without Noel. It's a real,
you can. And I think it's a really sad thing actually, because they work together. I mean, it was brilliant. And I think that it's a real shame, but you know, I think everyone's given up on them two becoming mates, haven't they?
I think they will at one point in about 10 years or something. When
I don't know.
Because it's the sort of band that I think, you know, not that, like, I've never really got into the Rolling Stones, right? But those sort of diehard fans that have been through their lives and still watching them.
Yeah.
I think Oasis would have that.
Oh, 100%. I mean, if Oasis reformed in 10 years, everyone I know and grew up with that was into them would be there in a heartbeat with their fucking...
They could definitely sell out Wembley a good few times. I mean, it's
Damon
Albarn said it recently. When Damon Albarn and Blur reformed and they did two nights at Wembley, like in an interview, they were talking about sort of, you know, Britpop and that. And he said, you know, the difference between him, like Blur and Oasis, is if Oasis reformed, they'd probably do five nights at Wembley. You know what I mean? There is still that. Oasis are in terms of the UK, they're the bigger band. But internationally, you know, I think not so much. They're so British, I think, that, you know, they never really cracked America. They never, you know, I think they're too English, even, not even British. It's English, aren't they?
But I think that's what's so brilliant about them. And I think they were the better band. But it's just
I think they were initially the better band. Their first like two albums or so,
they changed the game a bit, didn't they? Like from all the ravers, it was all raving, and then they went over to Oasis.
When I look at overall back catalogue, you know, if you look at start to end of Blur and Oasis, at the time I would have said the first two albums of Oasis are the best, but I think overall the back catalogue, I think Blur have got a better one, but that's just because I think they had overall better albums. Like, I think there was a big drop off from Oasis for me after a couple of them.
But
I think over like the five or six albums, whatever.
That's probably with whatever was going on with them, though. Yeah, exactly.
They almost burnt out by being so angry at each other all the time. But
which is a real shame. But you know, that stuff happens. It's how it goes. Yeah.
And here's another question from Gareth. It's a basic question, but how did you get so good at accents? I suppose the question there is it something you did naturally, and then that's probably something that led you towards things like acting, or is it something that...
You do a good Lancashire one. It's really, really nailed that.
Is it something that always came naturally to you? And is that something that comes from... Your mum was Spanish. Because I think people that have different accents in their house often are better at accents, you know?
So I've always done accents, and I used to do it as a kid. Like, I was the one messing about in class, typical blah, blah story. I've always done accents. And like, I remember I was about 18. I remember going to a party, and I pretended to be American for like 2 days. And then when I dropped it, my mate thought it was really funny, because that's the sort of stupid thing that we do. And then when we dropped it, everyone got really cross with me. And I didn't think they would, because I fooled them. And then I remember my dad used to work in Saudi Arabia. So like, I'd have to go there. And I remember when I was there one school holidays, and it was for American company that he worked at. I did that the same thing and I fooled them. And I fooled Americans, which was really, I did find childishly funny for myself. But I think what it is, I don't know if this is true, but people say if you grow up in a household where there's like different accents, as you were saying, you then your ear listens in a different way to each parent.
Yeah. Well, you've got to listen. And closer. So it's like, you know, I've got, my mum is like, her Irish accent, even though she left Ireland, I mean, I wouldn't even know now, 53 years ago or something. Her accent is as thick as the day she left. But like, I don't hear it as thick. I just hear it. I hear it's totally clear, but my mates growing up could not understand a word my mum said. They were like, just such a thick accent. But, you know, I don't know if it's just...
But it's the thing with, like, I had a Lancashire... Like, my dad's Lancashire. His accent's like... And it's proper Lancashire, like soft R's and, you know, and the way he speaks. And my mum's got her Spanish accent. So they'd say the same sentence, but if you broke it down, listening to it in a really angle way, it's so different. It would like two different languages. And that's what, and I sometimes find that if you're doing stand up in, you know, like a touristy area, say if you're in London and there's a lot of tourists, and if I'm listening to the MC and there's loads of people from all sorts of different countries, I have to be careful how I speak, because I would say things like, and I'm a bit of a nerd about things like this because I do voiceovers and stuff. So I'm really, I love voices and accents. It's just a thing I just like to do anyway. I mean, I talk in different accents to my dog for no apparent reason. It's just whatever my brain's doing. Anyway, so I might say, I think.
Yeah.
And so somebody's going, so somebody's second language is English, is going, what? But I mean, I. And when you think about it, people get completely confused by that. So I have to speak differently, a little bit differently. Because when I first moved here, I was like, I'd chat away to people doing that northern thing, like on the tube, and realise people don't do that. And I used to speak really, 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 really quickly, and everybody would constantly be like, I'm sorry, what did you say? Sorry, didn't quite catch. And then I was like, I had to start talking really slowly to people so people could understand.
It's a way.
This is quite slow for me. You know, I do speak very, very quickly. And I had a very broad accent as well. Like my sisters, it's really weird because my sisters don't speak like me. They don't speak as northern. What somebody once said to my sister, gosh, you sound like Fiona, and she got really offended.
My wife keeps sort of pulling me up on the fact that I do loads of stupid voices, not in accents, just stupid voices with my daughter. She's only three, but now
they love it though.
But she now, my daughter, there's certain words she says in the silly voice rather than normal, like so. And she'll say it, and my wife will just be like, well, look at me. It's like, is that what you've been saying? It's like, yeah, it is actually. Like, so she does.
Would you do like, but you Indian know what? When you read,
well, no, like all
you
sorts.
Read stories. Like, I used to read stories to my kids when they were little, and I'd make all the characters have, I'd bring them to life with a character's voice. And it's like, it's lovely for them.
I bet
them,
that was
actually.
Great, yeah. It's they just get pulled into it. I had a teacher in school when he read books to the kids. He did that. He did all the voices, and everyone was just mesmerized.
Yeah, because it's a lovely thing. It's great.
Yeah.
Let me see. Let's do another question. I mean, this question is very vague and it's actually quite bleak. But somebody says, this is a question for you all. What domestic or global event could happen next to make the world an even more miserable place? Keep up the great work. I don't think. I mean, it doesn't.
I don't know,
a nuclear bomb probably is it, isn't it?
It's true, but that question,
a bad gig. It's making about me.
That question's so so open-ended because, like, everything is pretty horrible at the moment. I've never, ever felt so bad in this country. Like, I was walking by the river last week and it was just sewage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
2 days.
It does feel shit. I've been chatting to loads of people in a minute.
Into our waters. Yeah. It can't get any worse. It does.
I do think, I know often there's that danger of, like, what's it, presentism is what they call it, isn't it? When everyone obsesses, oh, now's the worst time ever, and everyone goes, yeah, what about during the plague or something like that? But in terms of, like, I think now...
We're talking about our lives.
I think that's the natural way of doing it. But I'm not saying it's the worst time ever, but I do think...
because we're more aware
of
it.
No, I think in terms
Twitter
of, especially like in London and like in the UK, travelling around, there is, in my lifetime, I've not felt what there is now, which is a general sense of like, oh, fuck it. You know what I mean? It's like, I do think people are a bit miserable.
Train seems to be never been worse.
Nothing seems to work well.
Trains.
Everyone's
getting stabbed.
I mean, I don't think, like, even crime doesn't even, I'm not too worried about that. It's just, there's a general sense of misery that I've not felt as consistent than the last
people
3 or 4 years.
More divided. Politically.
Everything. It just feels at the minute like it's a bit eggy in this country and like,
yeah, but you've got this government that, I mean, just little things. Like every day, it's like little things that chip away at you. You can wake up in a really good mood and you read a little thing on the socials and it's like, oh, the government have just rubber stamped another 3 years of using harmful pesticides in our food. One of them, which is so toxic, it's that these are all banned in Europe and everywhere else. But we, okay, let's give it to them because, like, we don't matter. And it's like everything about it, sewage in our water, bad food, you know, everything about it is horrendous.
And also, it is like
just living,
that's the thing. Like, I know we're in the digital age and things are meant to be easier, but like, here's a little one. I've been trying to contact a hotel at Heathrow Airport. I'm gonna name them Radisson Red Hotel, Heathrow Airport. Right, I booked because I'm flying out tomorrow. I'm going to New Zealand. my wife and daughter are flying to Melbourne on Monday, and I'm going to meet them there in a week time, right? Because I've got to do a bit of work in New Zealand.
I hope your house doesn't get robbed.
Thanks. That's something I also hope. But...
What's your address so we can protect it?
You got your Ring doorbell ready?
I have, actually. Fully charged up, ready to go.
Good. But,
wear a mask.
Just put a bit of plaster over that Ring doorbell. But I basically, I booked a hotel for my wife and daughter to stay at Heathrow from Sunday afternoon till they fly on Monday. So they can have a nice day in a nice hotel, swimming pool, mess around, late check out, and then go and get on the plane just from the hotel. It's so much easier for them. And basically booked it. It's all gone wrong. They've now emailed me saying we can't do a late checkout, which has totally negated the reason to do it. And I called them, and it goes through to a call center in somewhere in like the Philippines. And I spoke to them. And I said, "Well, I need to change this." And they were like, "Well, we can't do it here. It's got to be done directly with the hotel." They've given me the number for the hotel reception. I've been calling for 2 days and no one's answered. Like, it's like I know it's such a petty gripe, but. Like, I'm sure it's
not a petty.
It's
really,
like 2 days.
It's
you shouldn't be calling someone for 2 days and there's not an answer at a hotel reception. Like, you know, that is like, how have we fucked? How
this
have we
is
fucked
the thing,
everything to that point?
But this is why I think I always say
nothing works. Yeah. Like phone
reception.
It's like, I mean, like phones cut out all the time.
My phone reception's never been worse.
Exactly.
Man.
Everything's fucked.
My phone reception is abysmal. I can't even have a call.
That's it. It cuts out.
I mean, yesterday...
I need to pay it.
Yesterday, I get this thing from yesterday, I get this thing from DHL, and they're going, for 2 days, you're not thinking, we're going to deliver your parcel, your parcel. I'm like, well, I haven't ordered anything. And then it goes, oh, we've delivered your parcel from this company in Dudley that sells beds. And it's like, we've delivered it. So they've delivered it somewhere, and I'm like, hang on. I haven't even ordered it in the first place. So it's kind of like,
they might
really
want
weird.
You to click
you try
on
and
a link,
phone DHL.
Though. It might
you can't,
be kind of a
and
con.
You put the number in, doesn't work. And you just sit there going,
scam,
right, so none of this has worked. Somebody's ordered something from me. So I'm going through all my bank accounts. And it's kind of like, you just think, why is it? Everything's
it could
so
be a scam. You know that. That's
stressful.
What they do.
Yeah, I think that probably is a scam.
They want you to click on something.
Yeah. It's fine. I mean, it's shit. Like, you know, it's like that thing of, yeah, I can't get reception on my phone in my kitchen, which I do think, you know, I personally think mobile phones should work in your house. You know what I mean? Like, that is somewhere you might need to use a phone. It's just, oh, man, it is. I find it, I'm very relaxed about everything, but I find it so frustrating with just technology.
A bad phone signal is annoying.
It's the most annoying thing you can go through. And that's a big claim, actually.
It's quite a good thing, though, if you don't want to talk to someone.
It is, yeah. Obviously, there is that.
Most tragic thing on the planet.
Let's see what other questions we got. Right. We don't want to do the... Yeah, so the world basically is fucked. Let's move on from that one.
Let's kill ourselves.
Somebody's asked, who's keeping an eye on Julian while I'm away in the Southern Hemisphere? And then somebody replied with the Met Police.
Social services.
it is a nice one. Susan has said...
Me too, please.
Susan said, have you relented and put the heating on yet? I'm currently wearing 3 jumpers and about to crack. We put our heating on for the first time 2 days ago.
I've been blasting mine, yeah. I've been blasting.
Yeah, I did mine last week for the first time. And I just hate being cold. So, yeah.
It's that thing of, I don't mind being a bit chilly, but in the house, I've not thought it was that chilly. But then when we put heating on 2 days ago, it was so nice and warm. I was like, oh, yeah, I've been cold for about two weeks.
It's
like,
nice, isn't it?
I think my base level was
just
wrong.
A little day nap with a heater blasting.
Oh, man.
Yeah, boy. Yeah, yeah. I'm getting old, man. I bought a dressing gown the other day.
Oh, dear, that's...
Have you never had one in your life before?
I have as a kid. Not really as an adult, though. No, not a dress.
I think they're too warm.
I bought actual pyjamas last year.
Yeah, pyjamas is fun. I mean, I'm anti-pyjamas.
I've mashed them up in the dryer, I think. They're a bit shrunk and stuff.
You know what? I don't think that surprises anyone.
Yeah. I was using dishwasher tablets for about 2 weeks in the washing machine by accident.
Again, same.
But I find, like pyjamas, I find dressing gowns too hot. There's a fight, like, it's just too warm.
Yeah, I like pyjama bottoms and big sweatshirts and things if I'm mooching about.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Down to the shops.
Yeah.
Do you go out in them, though? Are you somebody who'd go to the shops in your pyjamas?
No, I do stand up about people in pajamas. I find it so offensive. Yeah. I don't want to see people. Yeah. I don't want to see people in pajamas, in their slippers, in their ankle tags. I don't want to see them in my supermarket.
But Joe, and this is going to be something I guarantee I'm going to see tomorrow, is I really get annoyed when people go on long-haul flights in pajamas. I know it's 24 hours and you're going to sleep, but it's a flight.
I can dress up.
I've got this old school, like 1950s view that you should dress for a flight.
But it's just a bit grim. You know, when you wake up and you just dive into the shower. Why sit there in the pyjamas that you've been sleeping in? I find it really weird.
I just find it, people are so underdressed for, you know, you might die in those clothes. You might be in a plane crash. I don't want to die in pyjamas. I want to be dressed accordingly. So that's my sort of probably unpopular opinion, but yes.
I remember seeing, I was living in London at the time and I was looking for a school, like for one of my kids, and the nearest school, I thought, I did that thing that parents do where you go and have a look at, like, you know, in the afternoon when they're all leaving, you do that kind of thing of like seeing what kind of people, whatever. And I remember seeing this mum in her pyjamas and her slippers. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, snacks, you know, healthy snacks. And she had this bag of sweets. She was having a cigarette and she was like, "Oi, Cameron, get off that fucking wall." Yeah, and she had her full pajamas,
baby mamas.
Slippers on. And I was like, "Oh my God.
Get off that fucking wall." Yeah.
It's a horrible thing to judge anyone, right? Because I smoked for years. I used to be rough as guts, mate.
Right. That's the end of this week's public episode. We hope you enjoyed it. What happens now, Julian?
They can, if they want to hear the rest of the episode, they can go over to patreon.com/wearetvi.
There you go. Once you've signed up there, you can hear the rest of the episode. You can hear all the old Patreon episodes, exclusives, whatever.
It's 45p a week.
Is it? Mm. That's cool. Mm. I didn't know that.
Easy life.
There we go. It's even cheaper than I thought. So do that. And but if not, don't worry. You can listen to next week's public episode when it's released. Thanks.
Thank you. Love you.
You're actually changing the podcast. I think you're...
I think you're...
I think you're...
I think you're... I think you're...